From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. If you have a computer, a smartphone, use Google or have a Facebook account, then you've come across an end-use legal agreement. They are the terms and conditions you must agree to in order to use the software or service. Have you ever read them? I didn't think so. Unlike Bernard Ouellette, you probably haven't. We just click I agree and go on. But each set of terms and conditions is a legally binding agreement between you and the company. Documentary filmmaker Cullen Hoback takes a deep look into what we're agreeing to in his new documentary. It's called Terms and Conditions May Apply. It's at the Seattle International Film Festival. In fact, it's going to be this afternoon at 3:30 at the cinemas, the Uptown Cinemas in Lower Queen Anne. Cullen Hoback, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, great to be here. Thank you.
So should we read the terms and conditions?
You know, no, I don't think we should be having to read the terms and conditions. They're designed not to be read. I mean, I, of course, read my share of them. But the reality is that these things are, they're onerous. They're, you know, they look more like texture rather than words and spaces, right? So I think it's important for us to understand what these companies are taking from us. And that's really what I'm trying to investigate in this documentary is what are we giving up in exchange for these services?
Even if you do read them, is there ever an aha moment where you go, oh, my God, that's buried in paragraph 54. It says da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah. I mean,
can you read it? It's because it's legalese. It's hard to interpret.
Yeah. I mean, there are lots of those kind of aha moments. It's sort of mind-blowing what these companies are taking. And in these contracts, I think the one thing you'll find in almost every user agreement is the phrase, we can change these terms at any time. So what contract would you ever agree to where the other party can change the contract after you've signed it? You wouldn't. Mm-hmm. So
you found this company called GameStation, and they slipped an amazing condition into the terms and agreements. What was that?
Well, yeah. I mean, they just wanted to make a joke out of the fact that no one reads these agreements. And so they added into their terms that they get the right to your soul unless you clicked on there's some sort of link, and then you could actually get a discount on a video game, something like that. So, yeah, 7,000 people ended up giving up their souls to GameStation that day.
And also, you or someone figured out how long it would take the average person to read through all these agreements if we indeed did it. It's quite a long time.
It's an unbelievable amount of time. It's a month of work out of every year is what that would amount to. So it's 180 hours.
We're talking about terms and conditions may apply. It's what you see when you're on a computer, on a smartphone. And it's also the title of Cullen Hoback's documentary. The big picture here, as I got from watching the film, was that law enforcement no longer needs to kind of do their own surveillance of us because we willingly give up so much information to Facebook and Twitter. And it's all public, and they can get a hold of that really easily, a lot more easily than they can other bits of our information.
Very easily. And a lot of this is granted by something called the third-party doctrine, which basically means that if we give our information to a company, the government can then go to that company and get the information from them directly. So it's much easier for them that way to get it than, say, trying to get it from us directly. They've tried in the past. There was this program called Total Information Awareness, which got shut down in the early 2000s. And then, lo and behold, a couple of years later, Facebook, all of these different online sources, MySpace at the time, started doing exactly what the government had tried to do. And people were willingly giving up this information, not realizing that it could easily be handed over. And these giant dossiers could be built on every single individual.
Now, is my terms of agreement with Google or with Apple, does it say that they'll tell me if the government is looking for information they have on me?
You know, they're not required to tell you. And in fact, in many instances, they can't tell you. There might be a gag order put on the request. That's something that Twitter fought back against. Twitter's actually really stood up for users' rights more so than a lot of these other tech companies.
You found some really interesting people who've kind of gone awry with this, an Irish tourist who tweeted about what a great time he was going to have when he came to the United States. Tell us that story.
Yeah. So this guy from the UK, he said he was going to, I think at one point, paint the town red, and then he was also going to, like, dig up Marilyn Monroe's grave, and then he was going to he was just going to have like a wild time here. And
it was something like, we're going to blow it up.
Yeah,
or something.
He has this quote. But anyway, what ends up happening, and he ends up with a smiley face too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's gonna tear it up when he gets there, right? And so he ends this bit with a smiley face. And 2 weeks later, he shows up in an American airport, and he gets arrested. And he doesn't know why. He's like, well, maybe it's just because I'm an Irish tourist, Irish passport. Maybe they think I work for the IRA, something like that. And they put him in a detention center, he and his girlfriend. And apparently they were really rough with him, and then they'd sent him back to the UK the next day, and he's now on all kinds of watch lists because of a tweet, because of a joke.
Well, yeah, he's pretty good humored about it. He kind of is laughing about it, but he also says, now I'm afraid that I will get caught every time I go to the airport to go somewhere else. And I don't know when you did that interview or if you've been in touch with him again, but has he run into problems lingering because of this message that he put out there that they found?
Yeah, well first off, our government hasn't even really acknowledged that this happened to him. Mm-hmm. Regardless, though, yeah, he's on watch list. Every time he goes through an airport now, he gets hassled.
Another revelation you have was how you can find out about people's Google searches. And you did this with a guy who used to write for a TV crime show. And you mm-hmm. actually, it was a great scene in the movie where you show him some of its Google searches, right?
Right, yeah.
And, well, first of all, that's kind of a surprise to know that you can do that. You can find out what my Google searches were for today.
You know, I wouldn't be able to do that. Basically, what happened was AOL released a bunch of these so-called anonymized search records back in, I think, 2007. And it took reporters very little time to figure out who exactly made those searches. So I basically just pulled a list of those same searches. And within those search terms, there were things like wife killer, how to kill your wife, decapitated bodies. And in the middle of it, the user actually looks for steak and cheese. Well, as it turns out, I show this to my friend who's a writer on Cold Case.
It was his searches.
His searches. Well, you know what's funny, actually? It doesn't matter if they were his searches or not, because he literally searched for every single one of those things. So it could have been him. It could have mm-hmm. been anybody. Mm-hmm. We don't know. But the point is, I mean, he even searched for Philly cheesesteak because, well, Cold Case took place in Philadelphia. He's a vegetarian.
Right.
So he needed to know what a Philly cheesesteak looked like.
So the idea here that for some reason he comes across the radar of police and they look at this and they go, oh, my God, he's researching how to kill his wife.
Yeah, we have to stop him, right? Yeah. We need to prevent this murder from happening, when in reality, he's just doing research for a TV show.
I'm talking to documentary director Cullen Hoback. He takes a deep look into what we're agreeing to in the film that's just out now called Terms and Conditions May Apply. It's at the Seattle International Film Festival. And is it going to be released nationally?
It will be, yeah.
Do you know what's going to be in Seattle by any chance?
It will be back in Seattle in July.
Okay.
Yeah, so it'll be in about 15 cities, and then it's going to be broadcasting on Pivot, which is Participants' new station, in August.
It was interesting that you also took a look at how these terms and conditions have changed over time, and there's a great chart you show in the film on how much more information we're giving up.
Well, you know, I mean, Facebook is the biggest sort of criminal when it comes to this. And over time, they've made their users' information more and more public by default. Now everything is public by default on there except for your contact information and your birthday. And that's not how it started. And that's how most of these services began. They began with a sort of anonymous, private setting. You know, Google was really founded with this idea. And that's something that I uncover in the film as well, which is that, you know, Google's first privacy policy really protected user rights. It really showed what their initial value set was, which was that they wanted users to have an anonymous experience. Now, what's interesting is that Google doesn't have their privacy policy posted on their archives page. The first one's not there. The one that talks about, you know, users being anonymous and that they're going to protect users' rights in those ways. And I think that that's very telling because, well, you know, anonymity is not profitable.
Well, the kind of climax of the film is you go stake out Mark Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook's house, because you want to talk to him about this. And this very funny scene takes place. Tell us what happened.
Well, you know, I had tried time and time again to talk to anyone at Facebook. I'd gone right into their lobby and I said, hey, I'd love to, you know, set up an interview with anybody here who would talk to me about the privacy implications of their services. And they said, well, here's an email. You can send us an email. Well, of course, I've sent you lots of emails and no one ever gets back to me. They don't even have a phone number. They'll take your phone numbers. They're happy to pull phone numbers from, you know, all your friends, but they don't even have a phone number. And so this hypocrisy was really bothering me. And that was why I felt it was sort of necessary to confront or try to confront Mark Zuckerberg on his way to work to say, look, I mean, privacy matters. I know that I'm kind of a jerk for coming to your house and interrupting you on your way to work, but, you know, you want to have private moments too. And that's really kind of what I'm getting after when I assault him on the street with cameras is I wanted to just hear him say, look, don't record me all the time. Privacy matters.
And there's this great little scene where you tell him you stopped recording, but you didn't.
Right.
And he turns around and he gives you a little smile. Mm-hmm. which says something to you about his own attitude toward privacy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I told him we shut the cameras off, but I had, yeah, a camera in my glasses, which is not dissimilar from what Google Glass is going to be in the future.
Exactly.
Which is scary. But, yeah, you know, he thinks the cameras are shut off, and then suddenly there's this sort of air of relief and that he's no longer being recorded, no longer being documented. And he does, yeah. He smiles at me. And I thought that that was really telling. It just reads to me that, look, you know, it reads to me that privacy matters.
Right. He's relaxed all of a sudden because mm-hmm. he knows he's not being watched the way that we are watched all the time when we're on Facebook, et cetera, and everything being collected.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at his sister, during Thanksgiving, there was this photo that was of their family mm-hmm. that ended up getting posted on Twitter. And she's like, it's just basic human decency that you don't post something like that, right? So it's funny, you know, all of these guys care about privacy, but they're going to say the opposite because it's profitable to say the opposite.
What is to be done? I mean, periodically people will quit Facebook over that, but their numbers still grow. What is to be done?
You know, I mean, Facebook, some of the numbers have actually been declining lately.
Really?
Yeah, and I think that people are a little bit fed up with it. The problem right now is that even if you quit Facebook, they still retain that information. So until we get more control of our data and have more access to our data, until we can really find out what these companies are holding on us, it's going to be hard for us to be able to change things.
Is there any sense that anyone's going to make that happen at the government level?
You know, I think that there is a greater sense of awareness now, and hopefully this film will add to the overall awareness of what exactly the deal is when we're you know, using these services. And on the government level, I think that they will respond if they feel their constituents care. There are some laws that are being floated around. Aaron's Law is a good one. That's a national law. There's one that's being floated in California right now, which would at least give us access to the information that these companies have on us. And I think that's a really important first step.
Colin Hoback, do you still click I agree when you come across these?
You know, we don't have a choice. It's either you get the service or you don't. There's no compromise here, right? There's no negotiating. So, yeah, I mean, I click I agree because I don't have an option. And to be a part of modern society, either you use these services or you go live in the woods.
Any advice on what we can do personally to, if we click agree, do something to protect ourselves?
You know, I mean, there are privacy tools that are out there right now that I think are good kind of intermediary steps. Firefox is a great browser. It's, you know, by default now it has cookies turned off, mm-hmm. cookie tracking, which is great. Then there's something called Disconnect, Ghostery, and then you can use Tor to hide IP. So there's a few things which are out there right now which you can use in the meantime. The greater problem still, though, is that the government has unprecedented access to this information.
Yeah.
And we need to see some change on that level, I think.
Colin Hoback, documentary director. His film Terms and Conditions May Apply is at the Seattle International Film Festival this afternoon at 3:30 at the SIFF Cinema Uptown. It opens here in July. You can check it out then. And if this is a topic that interests you, more on it this Monday. My conversation with someone who's featured in Colin's film, Chris Segoyan, chief technologist for the National ACLU. Wired Magazine calls him a Ralph Nader for the internet age. We'll talk more about this on Monday on The Conversation. Colin Hoback, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
From KUOW, I'm Ross Reynolds.